And the, oh, you were saying that somebody called Cobb a philosopher?
Oh, Mockley.
Mockley called...
Oh, no, Harold Worster.
Harold Worster.
Said that he's one of the few people anywhere. I don't know if that's true or not. I'm sure there are a lot of PhDs in philosophy. But he said you gotta remember that when you talk to Mortel. That he's gonna try to philosophize.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now, was one of your reactions, as I've heard from other folks, that the 53 meeting showed how many people were really interested in documentation?
Yes.
And that out of that came the movement to make it an open membership organization?
You're talking about...
ADI.
ADI, yes. Well, two things. First of all, and this was Garfield's idea, he objected to the word documentation, which had a European and a vague connotation. And he was saying, we're talking about information. So why don't we call it information science?
Garfield said this?
As far as I know, yes.
Do you remember when he said this?
I can't, it's difficult for me to put a precise date on it, on the one hand.
Wasn't it this 53 meeting, though?
No, later on? No, absolutely not.
Well, with 300 people attending, were you surprised at how many people were there?
I was astounded, and so was Garfield, I remember.
Yeah, he said he had to do it all on his own because...
Because his boss didn't like it.
Yeah.
His boss was away, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, or sick, I think he was, or something.
It was Sanford Larkey, I think.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Now, did you join ADI as soon as it became an open membership organization?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, someplace right along in here, you switched from Johns Hopkins to Atlantic Research Company in Alexandria.
Operation.
Tell me about that. Was this a shock to you to go from the academic world to...
It sure was. What happened was that I became a friend of Dee Myatt, the editor of Industrial and Engineering Chemistry.
Uh-huh.
And I remember we were talking and... He was standing outside, as I recall, and he invited me to join them. And I was working, doing research with Ralph Shaw, and I wasn't getting along with him. Remember how I used to sit right in front of the rapid selector?
Oh, really? At USDA?
Yeah, it was at my back. And he used to come and do demonstrations all the time. And I was saying that you just want me to be an abstractor, and I'm not a good abstractor.
Well, now, was this in between Hopkins and... So for some period of time, you
very
went to work?
Short time, very short time.
Uh-huh.
6 months, maybe.
Uh-huh. Was the rapid selector actually operating?
Was operating, was making noises.
No. Wasn't doing much selecting? Or?
No, wasn't. That was a pretty crude version.
Yeah.
Yeah, it never was, never got off the ground. All these photographic mini cards, every thing which was image based, they never got off the ground. They were too slow.
Right.
Gun. They seem to go fast if you look at them with your eye, but it had to be electronic. It couldn't be.
So you were not impressed with the rapid selector at all, huh?
No, as a matter of fact, I wrote it. Did I write it, or I gave a critical paper on all of them? at some at a Gordon conference.
That you talked about the Rapid Selector?
Rapid Selector, and there was another one, Minicards.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember saying, this, what got everybody angry, that these are products of cost plus fixed fee contracts. The Minicard, the Rapid Selector. This is research where the purpose of the research is to get money. Whereas the newly evolved punch card and small computers, specialized computers, whatever they were, they are produced products and sell them. So one is a product of free enterprise and one is a product of sponsored research.
Mm-hmm. Sponsored by the federal government most of the time.
Mm-hmm. I remember I brought the house down. I thought they were going to kill me.
At the Gordon conference, were all these folks who were producing these machines?
Boy, they were angry at me.
Huh.
I said all the wrong things.
Huh. What was the year of this Gordon conference?
It was the only Gordon conference I ever attended. It must have been 55, something like that.
I think that's right. I have the date of that conference, but I don't see it just handy at the moment. Well, let's go back and talk about the Atlantic Research Company.
The corporation.
What were you doing there?
I was the head of the Technical Information and Library Planning Group, the ILP. And I ran a couple of libraries.
Mm-hmm.
And did more or less train the staff in the use of methods of using. I used to give courses there. And for some reason or other, perhaps induced by D. Myatt, who was an enthusiast, the president at the time got him an Arch Skurlock, S-C-U-R. L-O-C-K, became intrigued, and he used to get me to arrange courses, and he insisted that I interview every new person, and the place was expanding very rapidly.
Mm.
And his idea was, in the course of interviewing him, you'll educate him.
Mm.
And I spent a couple of years doing that.
Mm. Now, this was a chemical company more than anything else?
Any kind of research. It was mainly, as a matter of fact, they were interested in solid and liquid propellants.
Ah, okay.
It was mainly physical chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a basic research group, too. So it was vaguely like the Applied Physics Laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
Because the guys who were interested in the propellants business, they were interested in reports, and the guys who were interested in and they used to synthesize customized chemicals, did a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
Exotic compounds.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to know all of them. And then I was joined by a guy who was a librarian and a mathematician. And I was with him for about a year and a half. And he kept urging me to. He used to work for Moore Taub. Maybe Taub referred him to me. I don't know.
Uh-huh. What was his name?
His name was Robert Meyer, M-E-Y-E-R.
Uh-huh.
Robert S. Meyer. And he induced me, or flattered me into starting our own business.
Oh, so this is the beginning of the partnership, huh?
Hearn and Meyer and Company. And then we had a sort of falling out. We were working our tails off out of my house, and both of us were getting more and more irritable, and he decided that he didn't want to do this anymore. So he took off for California and became the librarian of the Lawrence Radiation Laboratory. And we were in touch pretty continually until he died, which was about 6 years ago.
Now, this was 55 that you all started the company. Were you both still working full-time for Atlantic Research Company?
No.
It looked like to me you had started this on some kind of part-time basis. Is that not right?
Well, yeah, Well, no, we were working for the Atlantic Research Corporation, and I must say we were very honorable. We bought out all our contracts, everything we were working on. And we gave Atlantic Research for about a year royalties, piece of the profit that we made on whatever we did. And they used to come in and audit our books to make sure we weren't cheating them.
Oh, really? Now, this was still out of your house, or you were doing it in the company?
No, out of my house.
Out of your house. And they still came in. So Atlantic Research would get the contract, and you would buy it out and work on it?
Yeah, and then we started getting our own contract.
And so you were working out of your house for how long?
About 2 years. Until we couldn't fit in the house anymore.
Yeah. Now, I had the first publication that Hearner, Meyer and Company did is 1956. Use of Technical Information in Small and Medium-Sized Manufacturing Companies. Was there one before that one?
No. I don't think so. That was... they had a huge meeting on information in industry or something. I remember President Eisenhower kicked it off, and it was pretty high-powered.
Oh, this is a White House conference.
Yeah. And we prepared this thing for that. And, pretty clumsy kind of thing. Had a lot of kibitzers.
In what way?
Well, why don't you put some of this in and put some of that in? And remember, we were constantly bickering, fighting. But some of we said we're not sure of, we don't know. That's somebody's opinion, and it became very political. Put it in anyway.
Political among the two of you, or
no?
With
John Green, who was the head of the Office of Technical Services at the time, he was more or less our sponsor and patron and so forth. He used to get us leads. So we had great respect for him, and he was and is a very likable guy. So, but he kept on bringing in. John liked us, but he wasn't sure we knew what we were doing. So we'd bring in consultants to help us. And that paper and that report became a hot spot.
So he was in the Office of Technical Services.
He was running it.
In the Department of Commerce.
Correct.
And so he got you all the contract to do this? Now I see that you had a couple more related publications on that topic that were PB documents. Was that still that same contract that you worked on?
No, as a matter of fact, we did for the National Science Foundation and various other agencies studies of how small businesses get information.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that became a preoccupation.
Yeah.
Because we made all kinds of strange discoveries, starting with that report, but going on. We discovered, for instance, that the primary way that a small business gets useful technical information is through its vendors.
Hmm.
Boy, that's an intriguing idea.
Yeah.
So we again reversed it. We went to vendors to see what facilities they have for disseminating. Well, why did they disseminate this information? And the answer, dummy as they say, is in order to sell their products. People don't know how to use their products or don't know about their products, then they won't be able to sell their product.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to a whole series of... we became semi-famous as experts on how getting information to small businesses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we also remember in a review paper that my wife and I wrote, we were saying that it's ironic that institutions such as the National Technical Information Service, which is a successor to the Office of Technical Service, they catered mainly to large businesses, which are organized to assimilate and use the information. And we still have the problem of how do these illiterate or whatever small businesses, how do they get information? And we went around and around, and we actually did surveys to find out how they get information.
Mm-hmm. So you went, as part of the survey techniques you knew about from doing your earlier study, to the small businesses and talk to them?
Mm-hmm. And this is several years later. They had a State Technical Services Act or something, which was, my recollection is, to get information to small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the Department of Commerce. And we did a couple of studies for them. We did studies of firms in the six New England states, and we were trying to design a system which they could use. We were trying to find... Yeah, it reminds me. We kept on trying to work up theoretical and practical systems for reaching...
I'm sorry. Excuse me.
That's okay.
You're not...
These are... everything is so interwoven, I can't...
hard to separate them out in terms of the number of reports that your company did.
Yeah, well, let's say that this is... I'm discussing when I talk about the six New England states and trying to figure out a system for reaching them.
Mm-hmm.
The firms in... and the smaller firms... And we decided we're not worried about the bigger firms. The bigger firms are the disseminators.
Mm-hmm.
To the smaller firms. And that's the sort of paradigm we came up with.
How did you get to them? Did you do some kind of random sampling of a list of these small companies?
From directories.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to make it as we did it by random sampling, but we got a fair representation
mm-hmm.
of the industries of New England.
Mm-hmm.
And then actually went and asked them, how you do it? How you get information? Again, using this critical incidence method. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the critical incidence technique, had you read in the literature about it, or did you come up with this idea pretty much on your own, or some kind of...
I certainly didn't invent it. It was invented, I think, at the... the term critical incident. American, what the hell was it called? American Institutes for Research. Did you ever hear that?
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember the name of it. In other words, I stumbled onto it. And then I remember Hal Borko said in a paper that we were the first people in the field to use critical incident. I remember saying to Borko, what the hell do I want to do?
I wondered about this myself, because I'm not sure when that technique got named that. You weren't calling it that at the time, were you?
No.
But you clearly use that methodology in your 50 case study.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. Yeah, that was funny.
When did you see that term first in the literature? Do you remember that, or is this something Hal Borko?
I think Borko introduced it to me.
Yeah, huh?
He's a big psychologist.
Right.
An expert in research techniques. I think he did a lot of studies. He liked to study technique.
Yeah.
How people abstract,
yeah,
and how they do this,
yeah,
and how they do that. And I was always sort of consumer oriented. How did the end user,
mm-hmm,
get it?
Mm-hmm.
And he was interested in how is it, what are the processes,
well, yeah, for
involved
studying.
In.
Uh-huh.
Curious, but interesting.
Did you read the methodology literature for doing survey research during that time?
Oh, yeah, a couple basic texts.
Yeah.
I remember my favorite was Mildred Parton. It's published by Harvard, called Surveys, Polls, and Samples.
Oh, yes, I remember that book, too. Okay.
Huh. That's quite terrific.
Yeah. Huh.
As far as sampling techniques.
Yeah. Before we get on to about running the company and that kind of thing, one of the things I noticed in your writing is that you've always been interested in standardized approaches toward things. Your writings on how to lay out a library,
mm-hmm,
the stuff on furniture design, library layout design, all those kinds of things. How did this interest start?
Just, I like interior decorating.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Just pure. I like to cook, and I like to decorate. I should have been a girl. But it was purely aesthetic.
Yeah.
I just liked it.
Huh. But you carried it on to standards in a number of other areas as well.
Yeah.
Because this was one of the approaches that the company took, too, to try to work on these kinds of issues.
That led us to a study of kinds of statistics that libraries collect.
Right, yeah. Because your ACRL monograph on staffing is a good example. Your writing on handling technical reports and the planning aspects, those, mm-hmm, early publications all struck me as being real, standardization oriented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just wondered what initiated this.
The feeling this is a... I remember being interested in neg entropy. I remember discussing this with Garfield at some length. I was interested in, it can't be random. It's got to be it's got to be organized on some logical basis.
Mm-hmm.
And all these things have to be predictable. And I guess you just raised a point that I never thought about. Why am I interested in? Because I am totally disorganized myself. But I always felt that maybe because I'm disorganized.
Well, probably, as you said, interested in aesthetic and interior design and those kinds of things.
And a respect for structure.
Well, it follows to some extent along with your interest in user studies, which is getting back to really saying exactly, let the user say how that he or she is getting information.
Yeah, well, I've often said that if you want to find out that the customers of the information apparatus, whatever it is, essentially design it, whether they know it or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in a perfect society, it would be that way. And in an imperfect society, you wouldn't be able to do this. Because the thing would not be responsive. It would mean that the users and the originators or disseminators are not talking the same language.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going their separate ways. And that is chaos.
Mm-hmm.
So that what I guess I'm driving at you're making me think about the whys. I wanted to raise one other thing. Which is interesting. In addition to debuying, I also, when we started the firm, acquired, and I remember exactly how we did, a client, which was, how you doing, Esso Research and Engineering, and their scientific, I forgot what it's called, but their information apparatus. And that which was just being founded, and they called me in to help them develop it, design it, after interviewing me at length for a whole day.
Oh, yeah.
And I conned them into they have kids come in to entertain
you. Entertain
you,
huh?
The old folks.
We'll take this chance and switch tape.